We'll turn over to Acts chapter 25 is where we'll be starting out. Today we'll cover chapters 25 and 26. So as a little bit of review from Wednesday. So Paul has come to, he had come to Jerusalem, on the end of his third journey, where it never tells us that he delivered the funds of the collection and everything, but we're confident that the group of them that were traveling together did that. But there, Paul runs into trouble, which was prophesied and which he was learning about through the Spirit, of trouble that was going to meet him in the future. So he is arrested and taken into custody there in Jerusalem for, charges that were not true, to say the least. And from there, he is taken to Caesarea, in a sense to keep him safe, to get him out of the very tense situation with the Jews in Jerusalem. So Claudius Lysias, the commander, takes him, sends him to Caesarea, where he's been for some time now. So there in Caesarea, it's interesting to know, and we've said this, and it's just to remember that the gospel's been in Caesarea for some time now. Philip went there after he had gone to Samaria, teaching. He had been there and set up his home there, seems like, perhaps from that point or sometime thereafter. Peter had been there. Paul, of course, had already been through there. The centurion was from there in chapter 10. So a lot of things had happened in Caesarea with the gospel being spread there. So he's in Caesarea, and he's allowed to have visitors come to him. It's not a real restricted kind of a custody situation with Paul. People can come into him and see him. There in Caesarea, he is allowed to, or he defends himself before Felix. And before Felix, Tertullus comes down to Caesarea, and he presents the case against Paul. And, as his case is pretty weak, he couldn't provide any proof. The Jews from Asia who had brought the accusations, they weren't down there. However, Felix keeps him imprisoned, and he hears his defense, but keeps him in prison through the end of his term. And it after Felix's term ends, then Festus takes over. So we'll go ahead and get to Festus here in chapter 25. Now, there's a little bit of family things that we'll talk about here with regards to Felix. And we'll get more. I've got a chart later on. But just know that there's some family ties here that keep going even beyond this into this next chapter. So we'll come back and address this here in just a little bit. So as Felix was done, Festus takes over. We get into chapter 25. So we don't know exactly. I looked for information on Festus, and it seems pretty sparse. So we don't know a whole lot of information about him. But from what I can tell and what I found is he's kind of a fish out of water, in the sense that he was appointed to come down here and be over this, to be the governor, the procurator of Judea. He's set up in Caesarea, but he's appointed for this, but everyone before him and after him have family ties. Okay? Felix married Drusilla. And I'll just go ahead to the, since I'm talking about it, I'll go to that slide. I don't know if you can see it or not. Felix was married to Drusilla, right? Jeff pointed that out Wednesday. And right here. So Felix is married to Drusilla, who is the daughter of Herod Agrippa I. So their siblings are Herod Agrippa II, Drusilla, and Bernice. Well, Felix was the governor, right? Then Festus comes in. He's not on this tree anywhere, right? Well, guess who comes down to welcome Festus and sort of a, you know, salute him or whatever is just a thing that they do. Guess who comes down to see Festus after he's appointed this? Herod Agrippa II, right? And his sister, Bernice. So Festus, he doesn't have these family ties. And the other thing is, he doesn't pretend or make any claims of being Jewish or know much about the Jewish people or their laws or anything. So all of that is just, you know, very interesting with how Festus deals with what's happening. So we'll go back. So chapter 25, Festus is appointed here, and he goes up to Jerusalem. And when he gets to Jerusalem, the chief priests, you know, the leaders there, get to him seemingly fairly quickly, and they bring their case against Paul. So Paul's in prison over in Caesarea. And they bring their case to Festus, who is now the governor, the procurator, and they request a favor from Festus. Now, what is Festus' job? He's over all this area, this Judea. Who does he answer to? Rome, right? And he seems to be more attached to Rome than even any, now all of them are, don't get me wrong, all of them answer to Rome and are appointed by Rome. Festus doesn't have any seemingly real ties to the Jewish people, whereas Felix married Drusilla, the Herods, you know, that was on the chart, had some, you know, real knowledge of the Jewish people, and even claimed to I think, go along with that. Well, so the chief priests and the leaders bring their case, and they their accusations against Paul, and Festus they want Festus to bring Paul from Caesarea back up to Jerusalem, just bring him back up there to stand trial, so they say. But look in verse 3. What was their real plan? Yeah. So what had happened? What was the reason that he went, that they had taken Paul from Jerusalem down to Caesarea? Well, because the mob and the riot and everything, what was the plan then? Kill him on the way, all right? So now, you know, the request is bring him back. And what do they want to do? Kill him on the way. So Paul is definitely wise to all this, and we'll see what Paul's reaction after a while, because it's requested again even after this. But at this point, the request, they ask Festus to bring him up to Jerusalem, and Festus replies, he denies that request, because he says, I'm shortly going back down to Caesarea. We'll address the matter then. Y'all can come down to Caesarea, and we'll discuss it there and do what we need to. So down in Caesarea. Verse 6, it says that Festus didn't stay much longer there in Jerusalem. He goes down to Caesarea, and he takes his seat on the tribunal and orders Paul to be brought. So here Paul is before the tribunal. He's gonna be before Festus. He's already done this before Felix, right there in Caesarea. Felix just left him in prison. Now Festus is here, and Festus is hearing the arguments, the case against Paul. So the case against Paul, same thing that they've said before. The charges were brought, but they can't prove anything. And so Paul argues his defense. And notice the points that he makes here. What does he say? I haven't committed anything. I haven't against the law of the Jews, nor against the temple, nor against Caesar. I haven't committed any offense against anyone, really. And we don't get the whole, you know, we just get a little glimpse of what this whole trial was. But Festus, he wants to do the Jews a favor. His job is to keep peace so that Rome is happy and the Jews are under control. And how many times have we seen them get out of control and riot and, you know, run to the theater with, you know, to kill people and so forth. So, you know, peace is a difficult thing to achieve here in with the Jews. So, Festus wants to do the Jews a favor. He says to Paul, well, do you wish to go to Jerusalem and be tried there on these charges? And Paul says, verse 10, he says, I am standing before Caesar's tribunal where I ought to be tried. To the Jews I have done no wrong, as you yourself know very well. If then I am a wrongdoer and I have committed anything for which I deserve to die, I do not seek to escape death. But if there is nothing to their charges against me, no one can give me up to them. I appeal to Caesar. Now, what does Paul know? As soon as that question's asked, do you want to go back to Jerusalem? Paul knows what the plan is. Remember, how many were there who had taken a vow to kill him when he was on his way down to Caesarea? There's 40 of them, right? They're probably pretty hungry by now. All right, but they were committed, them or otherwise, they were committed to getting rid of Paul, and they did not have success because Paul was taken, you know, quietly away and secretly away. But now Paul's looking at having to go back to Jerusalem. He's not going to make it there, and he realizes that. So he says, I appeal to Caesar. And that brings in a whole different thing here. It changes the course of action, because as a Roman citizen, he has the right to do that. He doesn't feel like he's getting justice. He has the right to appeal to Caesar. Now, what's Festus's options? All right? He could honestly, you know, through the trial, guilt or innocence, it would be innocence, and let Paul go. The Jews would be unhappy, and they would probably keep rioting. So Festus doesn't like that idea. What else could he do? Well, he could send him to Caesar. Well, that becomes problematic because Paul's a Roman citizen. What's the charge against him? It has something to do with the Jewish law. Festus really is kind of clueless. And I may be stretching that a bit, but it has something to do with the Jewish law. And Festus is like, well, what am I going to, you know, if I send them to Caesar, the emperor, I'm going to look pretty foolish, right? Well, we see that addressed here in at the end of this chapter of how Festus is going to deal with that. So, but Festus's reply, after he confers with his council, he gets some advice from his guys, and he says, you've appealed to Caesar you'll go. So, now, Paul, some days pass by, verse 13, and there's a new person comes on the scene. And it is Agrippa, King Herod Agrippa II. And just so we see it again, King Herod Agrippa II, and he has the king as the title, he's in the line. He is in the line. He's the son of Herod Agrippa I, who killed James and imprisoned Peter. He's in the line of Herod the Great, all the way back to, you know, killing the boys, the babies, you know, there in the Gospels in Matthew. So Herod Agrippa comes down to kind of welcome Festus, you know, to his new appointment and, you know, so forth and so on. And his sister, Bernice, comes with him. Now, this line, this family, this line, are very much knows the Jewish laws, the Jewish systems, even, I think, pretend to be Jews. But they are appointed by Rome to be in this spot. And what authority do they have? They're the ones appointing the high priests, right? They're the ones, the high priest in the temple of the Jew, of the Jews. So we get this really strange and really corrupt system of who is in the position of the high priest there in Jerusalem. So, yeah, it's been, that's, yeah, there's no more descendancy of Aaron sitting in as the high priest. That's been gone for some time, because of the corrupt nature of the system now. So, King Agrippa II arrives, and so he's there several days, you know, and seeing Festus and everything there. And now, from what I know, King Herod Agrippa II here doesn't actually, this isn't his territory. His territory is to the north and east from what I saw. So he's not over Judea, but he's down here visiting. So Festus, as they're talking and days go by, Festus brings Paul's case up. Said, hey, what do you think about this? And so Festus, this is what he says in verse 14, and this is kind of, he says, Felix left a prisoner. Now, as Festus is telling Agrippa II about what Felix did, who is Felix? Say again? Yes. But he's also somewhat kin to Agrippa II. Because Felix married Drusilla, who is their siblings. So Felix is actually his son-in-law. Right? So, brother-in-law, I'm sorry. Yeah, brother-in-law. So, yeah, there's a tie there. So Festus can't, you know, disparage Felix or anything, or Felix. So, anyways, he just has to walk carefully. Festus brings this up to him. He says, Felix left this guy a prisoner here. When I was at Jerusalem, Festus keeps going, the chief priests, the elders, the Jews, they lay down their case against him, asking for a sentence of condemnation. So, it's very clear what the Jews wanted. They wanted Paul killed. Felix knew that. Festus knew that. Everybody knows that. Not only were they a sentence of condemnation, which they weren't getting, they tried to plan these ambushes, you know, on Paul to kill him. Festus answered, verse 16, I said, it's not the custom of Romans to give up anyone before the accuser can face the accused can face their his accusers, and had the opportunity to make a defense. So they came together, and I judged the matter. He came before us, and the accusers, they brought no charge in his case, verse 18, of such evils as I had supposed. There was nothing there worthy of death, of condemnation. Verse 19, Festus says, rather, they had certain points of dispute about their own religion, about a certain man named Jesus, who was dead, but whom Paul asserted to be alive. Just the way, you know, he's kind of describing this, Festus doesn't understand this Jesus, who he really is, claims to be, and what everyone's saying he is, and that he's risen from the dead. Festus is just, they're talking about Jesus, who is dead, but they claim to be alive. It's very secular, you know, in his understanding. So he says, verse 20, I'm being at a loss to investigate these questions. I asked if he wanted to go to Jerusalem and be tried regarding them. And he appealed to be kept in custody for the decision of the emperor. So he appealed to Caesar, and I ordered him to be held until that time. So here Paul still is sitting in prison, and Festus is telling this story to Agrippa. So Agrippa, who knows the Jewish people, who knows the system, knows of their laws, Agrippa and Bernice, they want to hear from Paul. And they don't delay. Tomorrow, right? You will hear, they're going to hear from him. So the next day, with quite a bit of pomp and circumstance, as, you know, the king and his sister and their entourage and everyone, they enter the hall with military tribunes, prominent men of the city, everyone, you know, Festus brings everyone in to this hall, and they bring Paul in. And Festus makes an introduction. So in this hall, where there's going to be a lot of the Jewish prominent individuals, city prominent officials, all the people with Agrippa himself, and Festus introduces and starts this meeting. And Festus says, King Agrippa and all who are present with us, you see this man about whom the whole Jewish people petitioned me, both in Jerusalem and here, shouting that he ought not to live any longer. But I found that he had done nothing deserving death, and as he himself appealed to the emperor, I decided to go ahead and send him. But I have nothing definite to write to my lord about him. Therefore, I have brought him before you all, and especially before you, King Agrippa, so that after we have examined him, I may have something to write. For it seems to me unreasonable, in sending a prisoner, not to indicate the charges against him. Right. I should let him go, but I'm not going to do that, because that causes me problems over here. But I can't really just send him, because I don't know what to tell the emperor. Sometimes we have difficult decisions, and this can be for us too. I mean, this is his, you know, problem, but we create problems for ourselves when we don't do the right thing, don't we? That was Festus's problem right here. He wouldn't do the right thing, and it created this whole big problem for him. Now, it's not to say that there wouldn't be a consequence if he did the right thing, let Paul go. He was going to have to deal with the Jews and, you know, keep his finger on, his a hammer on them to keep them from going crazy, because they would have gone crazy if he'd released him. So, but here we are, and now Paul gets to speak. Agrippa actually says to Paul, you have permission to speak for yourself. So Paul makes his defense. And honestly, you know, rather than just making these points, I'd like to read this, because these are Paul's words, and we'll talk about them afterwards, but I think there's Paul says it himself better than I can restate it. So Paul gives his defense, chapter 26, verse 2. He says, I consider myself fortunate that it is before you, King Agrippa, I am going to make my defense today against all the accusations of the Jews, especially because you are familiar with all the customs and controversies of the Jews. Therefore, I beg you to listen to me patiently. My manner of life from my youth, spent from the beginning among my own nation and in Jerusalem, is known by all the Jews. They have known for a long time, if they are willing to testify, that according to the strictest party of our religion, I have lived as a Pharisee. And now I stand here on trial because of my hope in the promise made by God to our fathers, to which our 12 tribes hope to attain as they earnestly worship night and day. And for this hope, I am accused by the Jews, O King. Why is it thought incredible by any of you that God raises the dead? I myself was convinced that I ought to do many things in opposing the name of Jesus of Nazareth. And I did so in Jerusalem. I not only locked up many of the saints in prison after receiving authority from the chief priests. You can imagine him looking over to the chief priest, you know, at that point. From the chief priest, but when they were put to death, I cast my vote against them. And I punished them often in all the synagogues and tried to make them blaspheme. And in raging fury against them, I persecuted them even to foreign cities. So let's stop right there anyway, before we go on. So he makes the point. Agrippa knows. Now Festus, he hasn't known. He doesn't know what's going on. Agrippa knows the Jews, their customs, and controversies. And Paul makes the point. His really first point is, verse 8, why is it incredible by any of you that God raises the dead? That's the crux of the issue of the faith, of the gospel, of everything that Paul preaches, that all the Christians believe, that separates the Christians who have received that and accepted that and believe that versus the Jews who won't believe that, who won't accept that. So Paul gets pretty straight to the point in his defense before, and his words before Agrippa II. Paul says, he gives him his history. Before he learned this, before he knew Jesus, Paul says, I was one of you. As the strictest part of the Pharisees, of our religion. I even received letters from you, chief scribes, chief priests, to go and do what I was doing. Persecuted. And look what he says he was doing. Often in the synagogues, what was Paul doing? Trying to make them blaspheme. Well, how do you try to make somebody blaspheme? You put the screws to them. Whether that's physically or whatever. Trying to force them. In raging fury against them, I persecuted them even to foreign cities. And so that segues him into him going to Damascus with that letter, permission from the chief priest to persecute and bring back the Christians from Damascus. So, as I journey, he continues, in this connection, I journeyed to Damascus with the authority and commission of the chief priests. At midday, O King, I saw on the way a light from heaven brighter than the sun that shone around me and those who journeyed with me. And when we had all fallen to the ground, I heard a voice saying to me in the Hebrew language, Saul, Saul, why are you persecuting me? It is hard for you to kick against the goads. And I said, Who are you, Lord? And the Lord said, I am Jesus whom you are persecuting, but rise and stand upon your feet, for I have appeared to you for this purpose, to appoint you as a servant and witness to the things in which you have seen me, and to those in which I will appear to you, delivering you from your people and from the Gentiles to whom I am sending you, to open their eyes so that they may turn from darkness to light and from the power of Satan to God, that they may receive forgiveness of sins and a place among those who are sanctified by faith in me. So he presents exactly what happened to him on the road to Damascus. He was confronted by Jesus, this one who he is believing. He said, I was not disobedient to that, and I declared it first in Damascus. Then I went to Jerusalem, I went throughout Judea, and even to the Gentiles. And this is where he segues into his next point. I did all of this teaching and preaching, performing deeds in keeping with their repentance. And he says, verse 21, for this reason the Jews seized me in the temple and tried to kill me, because of the Gentiles. And it was Trophimus and that whole thing of the false accusations, the assumptions they made. He said, to this day, I have had the help that comes from God, and I stand here testifying both to the small and great, saying nothing but what the prophets and Moses said would come to pass, that the Christ must suffer, and that by being the first to rise from the dead, he would proclaim light to both our people and to the Gentiles. And he was saying these things in his defense. Festus cries out, crazy? Are you mad? Have you lost your mind? Agrippa, remember, he knows the Jews. He knows their history. He knows. And so Paul is really speaking to him and kind of, you know, just pointedly speaking to him. The prophet, just like the prophets told, just like Moses told, that the Messiah would come, a Savior, and who would bring light to the world. And Agrippa, we don't know what he's thinking, but it seems like he's like, okay, I know what you're talking about. And Paul then points toward Agrippa. He says, King Agrippa, do you believe the prophets? And Paul said, I know you do. And Paul said, or Agrippa replies to him, he says, in a short time, you would persuade me to be a Christian? Is that your purpose here? Is that what you're trying to do, is persuade me? We can read that a few different ways of how, you know, that may have been intended from Agrippa. But Paul says, whether short or long, I would to God that not only you, but all who hear me this day might become such as I am, except for these chains. So at that, the king gets up, they go away, they withdraw, and in their own, wherever they go to, Festus and Agrippa and the others, Agrippa says, if he hadn't appealed to Caesar, he'd be a free man. Well, that's probably overstated or misstated, because if Festus had let him go, a free man, he would be, you know, the Jews would be after him. Or if he had been sent to Jerusalem, he'd have been ambushed on the way. So, but Agrippa, in other words, he finds no fault in anything that Paul has done worthy of death or anything, is the really, you know, bottom line of that. Questions, comments, or anything? So when Paul said, if I've done anything worthy of death, then I'm willing to die for it. In other words, that is, in an indirect way, maybe directly, sort of God's allowing and blessing capital punishment from our governments. That's a good point. I've heard that, but I didn't think about it. Thank you.